Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
Give me a day to live, way out on the edge where the water
right.
Is. I'll climb
up
all the stones.
There's going to be references to that for the next year or so. I think I'll be making references. Don't be surprised if there's a fill-in-the-blank question on the next test. You know, who scored the winning goal? Remember, it's Sidney Crosby. But just saying. Though jokingly, all joking aside, there really would be, seriously, people that are depressed that would take no joy in this. And that's, we're going to talk a little bit today about what depression is, if my mouse ever associates, and then we'll talk about the drugs and how they work and kind of if they work. It's obvious by their name that they're for depression. They're antidepressants. You got to get the idea of what depression is, and I know that, you know, we're about 50-50 split between biology and psychology people in here, and even a lot of psychology people don't really understand necessarily what depression is, because part of that is that we use the word depression to mean something different in popular parlance. Had the unthinkable happened, and we lost that game yesterday, you'd hear people say, oh, I'm depressed. I'm depressed about the game. And they aren't really depressed in the sense of, you know, some sort of major depressive disorder. It's not just feeling down, right? It's something more than that. It's something bigger. It's more really than anything, in a lot of respects, about flat affect. Is there sadness? Yeah. Okay, there's no argument there. But really, an affect means, you know, emotion. It's about being flat. It's about taking no joy in anything. It's about being so down that you don't feel anything, in essence. Right? It's not just feeling sad or down. It's about being so down that you don't feel. It's basically, then, what that means then is a lack of emotion, which leads to a lack of motivation. Depressed people don't get dressed in the morning because there's no reason to get up. They may not get out of bed in the morning because there's no reason to get up. We talked the other day about psychosis versus sort of the old classic version of this, psychotic versus neurotic, and we don't really use that anymore. But this really isn't reality testing either, right? It's not the case that everybody hates you and nobody likes you, right? It's not the case that everything you do screws up. But that is the kind of thought process that goes on. It's a cognitive thing. This is what's going on here with these people, is that they actually believe they are worthless, that nothing they do, they will do right. People in the very bottom part of depression are much less likely to kill themselves than people that are starting to get better. Because people that are starting to get better finally have the confidence to think they could actually pull it off. And I'm not being flippant, and I'm not being sarcastic. Seriously, a really, truly at the bottom of major depressive disorder depressed person will say that they won't try to kill themselves because I'll screw that up too. I can't do anything right. Right? It seems more common now than ever for people to be diagnosed with depression, major depressive disorder, bipolar affective disorder, and dysthymia, which is kind of a weaker, smaller version of depression. It still feels pretty bad, and people still get antidepressants for them and therapy. But those three things, and especially depression, just in general, major depressive disorder, seems more common now than ever. And I got... I should go back. It seems more common now than ever, and I'll show you some data in a second showing you that that seems to be true. The question, you know, who knows why, it may have something to do with more diagnosis, more availability of drugs. So if someone comes into a doctor's office or a psychiatrist's office and says that they show these symptoms, and the psychiatrist's like, well, oh, I know what this is, and I actually know how to take care of it. Here's some pills. Right? So it might be that there's more people are more readily diagnosed. It also, I think, has something to do with the fact that more people are willing to admit it. This used to be something that you didn't ever say. This used to be something people were ashamed of. Right? American candidate, 1972 election, the Democratic guy for vice president, had to get off the ticket because he had been treated for depression. Nowadays, that would be like, yeah, that's the past, I'm better now. Right? People are very freely admit they take antidepressants. And I think it may be because now it's not, because there's a drug a lot more, it's seen more as an illness rather than some sort of weakness of your character, which it isn't. It's not a weakness of your character. Sadly, this website's down, but I found something really, like just recently, mentalhealth.com is a great website. But what we're talking about basically, because I'll find you some other stuff, is major depressive disorder and bipolar affective disorder, and I have them right here. I also have that. Anyway, let's keep throwing that up there now and then. So take a look here at major depressive disorder. Let's look at major depressive disorder first. So if you look at the symptoms, and this is basically lifted from the DSM. Depressed moods such as feelings of sadness or emptiness, right? Reduced interest in activities that used to be enjoyed. That's a key thing. You liked food, you don't eat. You like sex, you have no sex drive. You like playing video games, you don't play video games anymore. Right? Sleep disturbance, either not being able to sleep well or sleeping too much. Loss of energy or a significant reduction in energy. Like I said, not getting out of bed. Difficulty concentrating, holding conversation, paying attention. See, it's a cognitive, there's a lot of cognitive problems here. It's not just the emptiness, the sadness. And suicidal thoughts or intentions, note that doesn't say committing suicide, it says suicidal thoughts or intentions. As I said, most people at the very bottom of depression are less likely to try to kill themselves. They do. And you can see here, treatment, psychotherapy, and also drugs. So that's depression itself, major depressive disorder. Bipolar disorder is a little bit different because it's got two ends in it here. You've got both at least one manic episode. Mania is sometimes referred to as the other extreme to depression. An intense high where a person feels euphoria, almost indestructible, in areas such as personal finances, business dealings, or relationships. Have an elevated self-esteem, more talkative. See, again, thinking you're the best in the world, unless you're Sidney Crosby, is delusional, really. Right? At times, when you think about this, and I'm not trying to be flippant, again, when you hear that someone, they're the kind of person that if you went into a bar, they'd buy everybody drinks all night. Because they see this as personal finances, a classic symptom is people that just max out their credit cards in a day. Right? Classic kind of symptom. People just, they spend money like crazy. And it sounds like they'd be a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun until you challenge them and say, are you sure you can afford this? Now, when you think you're the best in the world at everything, being challenged like that, you kind of fight back. People tend to do really stupid things like, it says relationships. People tend to have unprotected sex with people that they aren't having actual relationships with. Things like that. So it's really, it's the opposite of depression, and you've got this, and then you've also got the depression. So you have ups and downs. Ups and downs. All right, questions about that? Does it make some sense? Right? I think most of you probably know about this, but I wanted to make sure. Slideshow.
Yes.
Probably. I don't know the numbers on that, but I wouldn't be surprised because we've got, when you think about it, the idea of this illness, condition, whatever the hell you want to call it, being socially acceptable is a lot more common, I think, in the West than it is in other places. I think it is, but I'm not really sure. Yeah?
What about northern latitudes?
Well, the thing about northern latitudes is interesting, or far southern probably, is the idea of seasonal affective disorder. Right? Where, and the reason this might happen, that it slows you down, is basically you constantly have jet lag because there's not enough sunlight. And I've heard it said that and I think I've seen data on this, that like there's much more depression in Scandinavian countries than there is in, say, Germany. Right? And you've got pretty similar cultures, except what you have there is people closer to, well, this time of year. Well, now it's getting nice now. But when you think about 21st of December, if you're living in Helsinki, the sun's setting at 2 p.m. and it's coming out at 9 a.m. So your clock has to constantly be reset every day. That's just how it works. And it gets reset by the onset of light and the onset of darkness. But if your clock basically keeps getting reset to the point where you think you're always in darkness, you're going to end up with what in essence is jet lag. But you end up with it all the time. This is a good point. Yeah.
I think Finland has the second highest suicide rate in the world.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
So that would tie into the depression thing because it's dark there all the
time. Yeah.
But as you said, when you're majorly depressed, you don't have the... You don't think you can...
Sad isn't quite as intense as major depressive disorder.
So
yeah. Yeah. And still, I mean, depressed people are more likely to kill themselves than non-depressed people. Mm-hmm. But they're less likely to kill themselves than people that are coming out of depression. Right? Yeah. I mean, there's very few happy people that kill themselves. Or normal people that kill themselves. Right? But you're more likely to kill yourself if you're depressed than you're not depressed, but you're even more likely if you're coming out of the depression. But still down. It's just enough to give you the confidence that you could pull this off. So that's a shame that mentalhealth.com is down, because it was a great site. It was run by a guy in BC. It was really good. But I just look for DSM-4 online, and you'll be able to find the diagnostic criteria, because that's what I just did before class. Yes, please.
How long does symptoms have to be present? Is it 2 weeks?
Six. It's 6 weeks. See, because this is normal if, 2 years ago my father died. Brain cancer. Killed him. I was pretty down for a couple of weeks. If I wasn't pretty down for a couple of weeks, there's something wrong with me. But I was okay after that. I accept it. What the hell am I going to do? Well, perhaps my time machine. But, there's nothing I can do about it, so you get by. Or a breakup, or losing a job. These kind of things, they often they can trigger depression in people. But when it's 6 weeks or longer, I think it's 6 weeks. I think that's the number. Then it starts to get to be like, what's going on here? Right? It's normal to feel down and have a lack of emotion when something like that happens to you and feel that life has no meaning. It's totally normal. It's when it stays. It's when it stays. There's, in fact, probably an interesting evolutionary reason why for depression. When back in the day, the old days when we lived on the savannah in Africa, when you did something that screwed up and you got sad, you should withdraw and not behave anymore because you just did something that screwed up, right? Of course, too much of that is depression. Here's some data. There's also social things. For example, this is having a kid. How old your kid is and the percentage of people with income. And those data are from 2003, I think. This is in the States. Infant, 11.4%. 13.6, it goes up. Child, 2 to 5. 6 to 11. 12 to 17, it drops down again. The most likely one, look at the income. Nice, almost beautiful, perfect straight line. Now, of course, happy people make more money, which makes them happier. Right? You've also got a whole bunch of other challenges when your family income is under 20 grand a year. Right? So there's all kinds of causes here. And just because there's environmental things, as there clearly are here, and because there's clearly going to be a genetic factor, you can't say it's one or the other. It's an interaction of the two. It has to be. Everything always is. Now, the question then becomes, well, what happens in the brain? You're going to see a lot of hedging here. You're going to see a lot of words like seems and might. Because unlike schizophrenia, where I can stand up here and confidently say, it's a dopamine problem, probably D2 receptors. Here's a graph. I can't do that with this because it's not nearly as clear. Not even remotely. It's somehow related to monoamines. the monoamine neurotransmitters. So things like serotonin or norepinephrine and dopamine. The new class of drugs, the sort of, well, the SSRIs, they operate on the serotonin system. So serotonin seems to play a bigger role than the other two, though there are antidepressive medications that work on these. There's a whole class of them, tricyclic antidepressants. So it seems that serotonin plays some kind of role. But it's not like, again, with schizophrenia and dopamine, where I say you take the drug, and as soon as it works physiologically, the symptoms go away. You stop hearing the voices. I don't even know if I should have the word certainly plays a role there, but I'm pretty sure of that. I'm pretty confident in that. And it seems that all drugs that work, that have some antidepressant effect, work at serotonin synapses by making more serotonin available. Again, this is pretty correlational. It's not pretty like that nice graph of D2 receptor binding and ED50 for antipsychotic drugs, which is too bad. Questions so far? Monoamine oxidase inhibitors, MAOIs, they were discovered by accident. They were engineered to work on digestive problems. And it turned out they did other things, like they had antidepressant properties. Same thing with tricyclics, which is another class of antidepressants. They were basically discovered by accident, their antidepressant effects. And for the longest time, the two sets of drugs you might have been given were either tricyclics or monoamine oxidase inhibitors. I'll explain how those sets of drugs work in a moment. They're actually really easy to understand in a kind of convoluted way, especially MAOIs. But either way, these were the drugs. The second generation antidepressants, the SSRIs, they were designed. Once people figured out it probably had something to do with serotonin, fluoxetine came out, which is Prozac, and the idea here was, let's make a drug that inhibits the reuptake of serotonin. Right, so that's how these drugs work. Their name tells you how they work. Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They selectively inhibit the reuptake of serotonin. So there's more, instead of it being taken back up into that original axon, there's more floating around. So it's like you've released more serotonin. The notion being, again, that it looked like it was a serotonin issue. Lithium, salts of lithium, lithium chloride basically, capsules, that's what's given for the manic part of bipolar disorder, typically. They're very cheap. The nice thing is, because SSRIs tend to be expensive, lithium chloride's very cheap. It's very, very cheap. That's the nice thing. So at least when you're taking your lithium, it's not so bad. Whereas like taking Prozac's expensive. But lithium's cheap. It's just the salt. It's lithium chloride. It's also the same thing that when you do taste aversion work in rats, that's how you make them sick, is you give them lithium chloride. So you've got to be really careful with the lithium. And we'll talk a bit about that. There are drugs now that are being developed to work on mania. No one knows how lithium works, really. There are drugs that are being developed. Who knows what's going to happen with those? There are some that there's a little bit of success is coming around. For all three types of antidepressants, the absorption is pretty similar. So they're mostly destroyed by first-pass metabolism, right? Except for the bit that gets to your brain. 1 to 3 hours for peak blood concentration. But now, you don't want a peak, right? You're going to have a peak, you have to. But you don't want a nice big therapeutic window, which is why you're going to use oral administration. And you want something that's going to break down pretty slowly. It's a little longer with the SSRIs, which is probably one of the reasons that they work a little bit better. Lithium is a deadly, deadly poison, lithium chloride. So you give these capsules that have lithium chloride in them. It's really a simple thing. It has a therapeutic index of 3. What's that mean? It means the lethal dose is only 3 times the effective dose. And if you've ever know anybody or you have ever been put on lithium chloride, you know that for the first little while, especially, you're getting blood work done all the time. And you're told by whoever wrote the prescription for you, read the bottle. Only take this many. Don't take more than this at any given time. Because you can die. And lithium poisoning is not a nice way to die. You basically have horrible stomach cramps, and it's really, really apparently unpleasant. I had a student in Newfoundland who came to me. I was teaching intro. And at the break, right after class, he comes up and he says, you know a lot about drugs? I said, oh, I teach the drugs course, actually. He said, yeah, I was just diagnosed with bipolar. And I said, well, are you getting treatment? He said, yeah, I am. And I'm taking lithium. So I took some this morning. I said, when did you get put on it? He said, oh, a couple days ago. I said, so if you're going in for your blood work all the time, right? And he said, oh, yeah. I said, why do you ask? He said, I feel kind of, and I looked at the guy, his face was turning green. Like literally green. And I said, okay, did you take 2 or something? You know, he said, no, I just took what I was supposed to. I said, okay, right. You're coming with me. And I took the guy and I took him down, in fact, to the main office, main administration office. And I said, we're going to make a phone call now. And there's 2 places we can call. One of them is 911. The other one's your father or mother. He said, oh, dad's at home. I said, okay, let's call your dad. And we called his father. I said, your son took too much lithium. He's probably going to be fine, but he has to go to the hospital now. And it turns out, he was getting lithium poisoning. It could easily kill you. Nice thing was, this guy, in fact, after about a couple of weeks, he came back. And for the longest time, he was having so much trouble in school because of his bipolar. Once they got the dose right, and he realized he wasn't supposed to take 2 instead of 1, he ended up getting an A in the class, which is great. It was a really nice story, except for the fact that I watched someone have lithium poisoning in front of me, which was really disturbing. So you got to be really careful, and you'll be told if you are put on these, like, you should be having blood work every couple of days until we get the dose right. And if you feel really manic, don't just take another one. You know, no. Right? Because everybody thinks that, right? Oh, let's see. Take 2 capsules. Well, I'm a big guy. This is a bad headache. I'll take 4. There's a difference there. These drugs all cross all the barriers, which makes you wonder then, because they cross, of course, blood-brain. They have to. But they also cross placental. Now, the question then is, what kind of effects do these things have on fetuses, the antidepressants? And they have to have some effect. So the question becomes, for a pregnant woman, just like it does with a lot of other drugs, how much can you cut back and still function? See, because if you're eating and sleeping are disrupted while you're pregnant, that's going to hurt the fetus probably more than getting a little bit of fluoxetine. Right? So the sort of a calculus has to be made there between the obstetrician and the woman to find out how much they can take. The MAOIs have a short half-life. When I say short, I mean on the order of hours. The TCAs, tricyclic antidepressants, a bit longer, around 24 hours. We're talking about a whole bunch of different drugs here, so I'm being kind of general. SSRIs have about a 15 to 20-hour half-life, which you kind of want, right? Fluoxetine has a 6-day half-life. So Prozac has a 6-day half-life, which is great because you want to get a nice steady amount in your system and you want to be able to take maybe one a day, right? Norfluoxetine is a 16-day half-life. All right. Okay, how do these work? I'm going to put all these up. How do monoamine oxidase inhibitors work? Now, okay, monoamines are the key, it seems like, right? You need more monoamines. What would monoamine oxidase be? What kind of thing is it, Steph? It's got to be an enzyme. It ends in A's, right? So what's it do? Monoamine oxidase breaks down monoamines. We need monoamine oxidase to digest food. That's what it's for. Okay? So, we want to break down, and we have this enzyme that breaks them down, monoamine oxidase. So what's happening typically is you've got some monoamines floating around in your body, and monoamine oxidase, it lops off on oxygen. It starts to break them down, okay? So we got another chemical that we naturally make, monoamine oxidase, an enzyme. We want to inhibit that. This is a roundabout way to do this, but if we inhibit that thing from working, now we can't break down monoamines so easily because we're destroying the enzyme. Okay, yes, Steph? Somewhat unpleasant ones, actually. A lot of stomach cramps, things like that people get. So they get stomach cramps, they might get constipation, diarrhea. Yeah, there's all kinds of possible side effects with those drugs. So they don't tend to be fun. There's not a lot of street value in these things. There's some street value in SSRIs because people have this notion that it makes them feel better during something. So people will take a Prozac because they got an important meeting, which probably doesn't work, probably doesn't do anything, but people do it. But yeah, it does have digestive consequences for sure. So what you're doing is you break down the monoamine oxidase, you bind to monoamine oxidase to make it not work anymore. Now it's no longer monoamine oxidase, right? Because the inhibitor binds to it and turns it into another chemical. Now it can't break down the monoamines, and now you have more monoamines available. Yeah, please.
How actually legitimate is it when they use SSRIs for people trying to quit smoking?
The biggest reason those are being used for people quitting smoking is to stop depressive-like side effects. They aren't actually stopping nicotine cravings. What they're stopping is the unpleasant side effect of being down. Right, when people quit smoking, and there's some effect there, it looks like, where one of the most unpleasant side effects of quitting smoking, besides the craving, is the anger and the sort of, used in popular parlance, not real here, depression. It takes the edge off, basically. It takes the edge off. And if someone is prescribed SSRIs for quitting smoking, they're prescribed and told, take these for the next 3 or 4 weeks, then quit smoking. And there's a good reason for that, which we'll get into. So does everybody understand how monoamine oxidase inhibitors work? It's a good test question, just saying. So it just inhibits something that breaks down monoamines, making more monoamines available. It's a very roundabout way to do it, but it works. Yes, Stephanie.
Antidepressants can be used for anxiety disorders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how does that?
That's a really good question. People tend to use SSRIs, but you will see MAOIs used there as well. Tricyclics are also used as sleeping pills.
Do you really know how it works?
As far as the sleeping pill, that's probably got something to do with serotonin levels. But MAOIs, I haven't seen it. They're also used for things like obsessive compulsive disorder. Both MAOIs and SSRIs are used for it. I haven't seen anything that makes a lot of sense as to why they work for either of those disorders. I kind of get why they work for depression. But the notion then would be that, like, you know, serotonin is the problem in an anxiety disorder. And OCD is an anxiety disorder, basically, right? Because you're anxious and you obsess about something and then you compulsively do something else. Why an anxiety disorder and depression would have the same neurochemical basis is beyond me. There's something else going on here with both these. The serotonin is not the whole story. It can't be. Because how could too much serotonin in one person, or sorry, not enough serotonin in one person cause, you know, thinking that life has no meaning and longing for the release that death would bring, and in someone else make them really, 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 really anxious and want to compulsively wash their hands 700 times a day. There's something else going on here. Again, it's not beautiful like the schizophrenia story, which is D2 receptors, drugs, look, straight line. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
Could they also be taken for diet?
People slow down what they're eating. It seems to have some appetite suppressant effects. Again, the notion there I've heard is that with people that are having an eating disorder, like they're eating too much, they do this, quote, perhaps because they're depressed. One of the problems you have in prescribing medication in general is things get prescribed for things that they aren't really for. This happens all the time. So you might get an issue here where you get somebody who either is a psychiatrist or may not even be one. Maybe an MD who really knows their stuff and thinks, oh, I know why you've got an eating disorder. It's because you're depressed. Here, take some Prozacs. And that's probably not the best approach. But, you know, things being done off-label like that happens all the time. All the time. There's just a controversy in, is it BC a couple weeks ago? No, more than that, about a couple months ago. Different drug, not a psychoactive drug, but a cancer-fighting drug. It was being used as a cancer-fighting drug, but in fact it was a glaucoma drug. It was something like that. Like there was anecdotal reports that it worked, and people start writing scripts. You gotta be really careful. This is why if you want to get diagnosed as being depressed, you should really go, first of all, to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist can diagnose you and prescribe. The psychologist can diagnose and then write a referral to an MD who can write a prescription. Your family doctor, they know a lot of things. And some of them know a lot about psychiatry. But they can't know everything. You know, just like your family doctor, would you go to your family doctor and say, I'm having heart problems, can you do an angioplasty? They probably can go, I probably could, but let's call a cardiologist. Right? So things get prescribed off-label all the time. It's kind of scary. Yes, please.
There's people with alcohol problems that are starting to get prescribed baclofen now.
Yeah.
You go back on sauce and you're taking a muscle relaxant.
It's a very, very, it's a deadly combination.
Yeah.
That'll kill you dead. That'll do you in a couple of those and a couple of beers and you'll die.
Yeah.
Like, it can kill you. No, it's people have to be... You have to work under the assumption, I think, when you prescribe things that people are going to actually read the label. And the problem is that, what else are you going to do? You're going to show up at their house every 8 hours and say, now you can have another pill. You can't do that, right? The problem is most people don't do that. And also people have this notion with a lot of drugs. And some of these are dangerous. Tricyclics can kill you. It's suicide in a bottle, tricyclic antidepressants are. Easy to overdose on those. If you give somebody, what's one of the issues with tricyclics? You give somebody a bottle full of something that says, don't take more than this many, and they're depressed, yeah, you're giving them depression in a bottle, or you're giving them suicide in a bottle.
Isn't it one that doesn't affect you through alcohol?
The SSRIs aren't quite as bad, and the MAOIs aren't quite as bad as TCAs are.
Yeah.
You still shouldn't really be taking alcohol with any of these. No. Any psychoactive drugs, just don't mix psychoactive drugs. You shouldn't mix any drugs. I did have a pharmacist once tell me that. I said, now, what's the thing about antibiotics? And he said, I think they just don't want people getting drunk and forgetting to take their antibiotics. But she said, don't tell anybody, though. So I didn't use her name there. But most any drug, you shouldn't be mixing drugs anyway. And this is why, you know, you should feel good. If you go into the doctor's office and they pull out that pill book and they look it up, you should feel good, because not all MDs have memorized the interaction of every drug with every other drug. In fact, they mostly haven't. Right? My mom said she was so happy the other day when her doctor pulled up her laptop and opened Wikipedia. Yeah, Wikipedia's not so bad. You know, look, if you're reading it and it says, and Jason is gay, you know that that's not really important. I just saw that vandalism on a page. Just that's why I mentioned that. You read and go, yeah, it's pretty good. I like that. I don't want them going, yes, I know. I'm going to go over this room now and consult. And they go, and they just pull out a book. Yeah, okay, I guess so. Yeah. I now know what to do. I've consulted with the wall. I like when they admit they're human. I think it's awesome. So MAOIs, tricyclics block the reuptake of the monoamines. That's a little easier to understand, right? So you get norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin. Typically, if there's any sort of leftover, it gets taken back up to the original neuron. Reuptake. However, if you block reuptake, again, the notion here is you don't have enough of these. If you block reuptake, you have more available. SSRIs work the same way, except only on serotonin. Okay? So the most roundabout ones, the monoamine oxidase inhibitors, the tricyclics just block all reuptake of all monoamines. SSRIs just on serotonin. The effects, the physiological effects, happen immediately. The antidepressant effects can take between, a couple of weeks and 6 weeks. It's one of those things that makes you go, It's clearer then that the depression, this is why I said before that if you were prescribed, say, you know, any SSRI for quitting smoking, you're be told, take this for a few weeks first, then quit smoking. Because the antidepressant effects take a long time. This makes you think that it's not just serotonin. If it was, if you took the drug, the symptoms should disappear. Just like they do with antipsychotics, where you take your chlorpromazine and the visions stop and the thinking you're Jesus stops. Unless you're Jesus, then it probably doesn't go away. So it's clearly not just serotonin or any other monoamine. There's something else happening. Now, are there real antidepressant effects? Yes. The drugs do help. Drugs are better than no drugs, and drugs with cognitive behavioral therapy are better than just drugs, and also better than just cognitive behavioral therapy. So the cognitive behavioral therapy part is once people are starting to feel pretty, what you're doing there is you're actually telling people that their thinking is incorrect. You demonstrate to them, you actually tell them, no, you see, it can't be the case that everyone hates you. How could it be? I like you. Yeah, you're paid to like me. No, I'm paid to treat you. I actually like you. You know, somebody invited you over to watch the Team Canada game yesterday. You can't, they mustn't hate you. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's challenging. And there's radical versions of it where you yell at people and stuff, which is the kind of therapist I would have been, which is why I never became a therapist. Rational emotive therapy, where you just scream at people. I love it. That's what I'd do. That'd be fun. What makes you think you're so special that everyone hates you? You're just, you know, you scream. It'd be awesome. Yeah, you have to get trained in how to do it. So I think regular old cognitive behavioral is quite a bit nicer. And most of you, if you've had therapy, or you know somebody who has, they've almost certainly had cognitive behavioral therapy. As a rule, it tends to be the one that works for most things. You know, on average, not for everything. How does lithium work? This is an excellent question. And we'll move on. Because nobody knows. It's a mystery. Okay. I should say MAOI, MZOIs are not, that's monoxamine oxidase. It's a rare, no. That's the Z and the A are right next to each other on the keyboard. It's a typo. There are cholinergic effects here because it's one of the monoamines. So you get dry mouth, constipation, dizziness, irregular heartbeat, blurred vision, and ringing in the ears. We're going from most common to least common.
Weight gain.
Weight gain. I don't think so, but it wouldn't surprise me. That might be an antidepressant effect. Weight gain might be an antidepressant effect because you start eating again. Like, there's all kinds of sleep effects on these from these drugs, but it might not be directly the effect of the drug on your sleep system. It might be that it's taking away the depression, so you're sleeping better. The one you tend to hear about a lot is dry mouth and constipation, and this shouldn't surprise you with MAOIs, especially. So it's cholinergic effects. SSRIs can lead to nausea, nervousness, which is kind of anxiety. Again, this surprises me why the hell it's, and I know it is given for anxiety disorders. Headache, insomnia, which again may be an antidepressant effect. And something called serotonin syndrome, and I kind of got that in quotes because nobody knows if there's a real thing here. It's kind of like a, where to put that, it's kind of paranoia and racing thoughts and stuff. Monoamine oxidase inhibitors block monoamine oxidase. I'm spelling monoamine oxidase 30 different ways. It's M-A-O. Anyway, Mao. It's like Mao Zedong. They block the leader of the People's Republic of China. The founder, really. Well, you need to digest stuff. So again, that's not just the acetylcholine effect, but then you're blocking an enzyme that's necessary. So you're going to have all kinds of digestive problems, stomach cramps, things like that. Tricyclic antidepressants are often used as sleeping pills. So, like I said, there, don't overdo it. The problem is if you're being given it for depression, you could easily overdo it. They tend to be very small pills, 5 milligrams, like very, very, very small pills compared to a lot of other drugs because you can do yourself in pretty easily. Seems like some of the SSRIs affect REM and some don't. Again, it's hard to know if that is a serotonin effect or an antidepressive effect. Because again, if you're sleeping more, you're going to get more REM. So you're sleeping properly now. As I just said right there, that may be an antidepressant effect. Apparently, Prozac, fluoxetine, makes dreams more vivid. There's a lot of things that'll do that. A lot of herbs do that. Hops. If you take hops, like for making beer, and you put them in a little bag and put them by your pillow, you'll have crazy vivid dreams. And you'll hear this a lot, excuse me, when you see the ads for various SSRIs on TV and they quickly read the side effects. You'll often hear, vivid dreams. One of my favorites is, waking up at night and having no memory of the event. Things like that. You hear a lot of that one. That's basically, in essence, sleepwalking or sleep sex. You hear about that too. Right. Pretty crazy. There was a guy in Alberta? Politician that killed his wife? And then he said he did it because he was on Prozac? Yeah, he didn't get... No, that didn't work. Didn't work. I think it was Alberta. I know there was Saskatchewan with Colin Thatcher, but that's different. That was the guy that he just killed his wife. God, I wish I could remember the guy's name. because it was when these things first came out in the early 90s. Okay, there's no liking and euphoria with these drugs. So unlike, you know, the fun drugs, you know, there's no like having a couple of beers and this feels great. It's like I'll take a few Prozacs. Canada just won. There's probably some cognitive effects with tricyclics, a little bit of slowing, cognitive slowing, which just means you can't do things like vigilance tasks, stuff like that as well. Well, they're basically, as I said, they can also use a sleeping pill, so that shouldn't surprise you. There's this whole worry people had, and it's not so much anymore, of SSRIs, in particular Prozac, being used as a, quote, personality cosmetic, where people say, oh, I've got a big meeting, I'll take a Prozac. First of all, the chance that that actually has any effect on you is virtually nil, because remember, right, the antidepressant effects, or perhaps the anti-anxiety effects, any of these effects, they're going to take weeks. But I remember when SSRIs first came out, and there was like a big story in Time magazine that, you know, named Prozac the, like, you know, the man of the year. Not quite, but I mean, it was all over the place. People were taking Prozacs. Turns out, you know, first of all, probably doesn't have much effect on you anyway. Secondly, I mean, sometimes people have a smoke before a big meeting, or they have a couple of drinks. You probably shouldn't have a couple of drinks, but what the hell, people do it. It's not that different, it seems to me, than having a drink. I don't know, whatever. If I had an important meeting, I wouldn't go get high, let's say that. But maybe that would work, I don't know. Wouldn't occur to me to do, though. I hate meetings. Maybe I should do that then before meetings. Maybe it would help me. Just take acid before a meeting. Hey, look, the dean just turned into a gorilla. That's awesome. I have no thoughts on the proposal. Yeah, I think I'll try that. I'm kidding. Heroin. Tolerance, withdrawal from these drugs. The side effects, the main effects show tolerance. That shouldn't surprise you. These tend to be, you know, they're operating directly on a set of neurotransmitters. Withdrawal can happen. People get agitated. They'll get nervous. They'll get chills, muscle aches. These look like, those are, muscle aches are clearly a cholinergic effect. That's acetylcholine. Chills are almost for sure. Agitation and nervousness would be more for TCAs and SSRIs. It's easy to keep people on SSRIs because the side effects aren't typically as unpleasant. Yeah, people get headaches, but they, you know, it's easier to keep them on that than they're getting constipated and have stomach cramps, right? And headaches are headaches. You can take some Tylenol, right? So I mean, it's a little easier. Of course, the issue still is that these aren't depression, you know. On their own, well, they're better than nothing on their own. They still, and they're not a lot better than nothing on their own, by the way. Recent data are starting to suggest that SSRIs are not the panacea they were made out to be. Do they do something? Yeah. Are they better than placebos? Yeah. Are they greatly better than placebos? No. The combination of the drugs and the therapy, though, really seems to help. You lose the ability to get an erection. That's what that means. Just when you finally get a sex drive back, you know, it's kind of sad, really. But we have pills for that now, so who cares? Take two of these and one of these and everything's fine. Now, again, note the word seems. It seems there's no effects on fetuses of most antidepressants. But there's nasty side effects in lab animals, low birth weight, birth defects, things like that. So if possible, when women are pregnant, they shouldn't take antidepressants. That being said, as I said, sometimes the calculus has to be made. What's better? Taking this at a lower level and being able to to make sure you eat and sleep properly and all these things, which are really important when you're pregnant? Or is it more important, you know, depends on the woman. You can overdose, especially on tricyclics, and they will put you out and you'll be done. You can take too many SSRIs and monoamine oxidase inhibitors. It's a little harder with those to do yourself in. But you can. Unlike tricyclics, which literally you take, you just done, you know, you kill yourself. Right? All right. Questions about that? Yes, please. Postpartum depression is interesting because there's data suggesting now that it might not even exist. That do some women get pregnant after they have a baby? Yes. But is the number of women that get pregnant after having a baby different than the number of women of that same age? It looks like most recent stuff suggesting that no, there isn't any difference. So it might not be something special. It might just be depression. I'm not trying to discount the idea that women get depressed that have just had babies. And it's not like just because a woman's depressed and she just had a baby doesn't mean that you say, oh, well, that doesn't exist. So, well, no, she still clearly would have depression and you still treat it that way. But it might not. It looks now like recent stuff starting to suggest, no, there's really no difference between the percentage of women who get pregnant and get depressed and the percentage of women that get depressed. It looks like it's one of those things where a lot of women, more women than men, get depressed, get major depressive disorder. So women get it, and some of them get it right after they have a baby, and that's a pretty obvious thing to put the two together. But it looks like it may not actually exist. You know, again, the depression that women are having is real. I'm not discounting that at all. Make that perfectly clear. I don't want protesters outside my house or my office. Again, yeah. That's right. Bad enough last week. It's a joke. Nothing happened last week. Please. Please. The Indignation Committee. So, but yeah, it's an interesting question because it's one of those weird things that we've always heard about, but there may not be anything to it, except that it's really hard to press. Yeah. Yeah, you hear, see, and that's the other thing. People thought, well, it's all these hormones. Yeah, it doesn't look like it. Yeah, which is crazy because for years we've thought about that, but the most recent stuff is starting to say, no, probably not. Probably not. And there are, of course, there's a smaller version of this, as I said, called dysthymia, which usually is where someone can actually function. Truly, people truly that have major depressive disorder and aren't being treated, they don't go anywhere. They don't get out of work or get out to go to work. They don't get up and go grocery shopping. They sit at home and do nothing. You know, yeah, sit in bed. Don't get dressed. Don't have a shower. Like, don't wash because, like, why would I? Who cares? Nobody cares about me and I don't care about me. If you ever talk to somebody with major depressive disorder that isn't having any treatment, it's not quite as disturbing as talking to somebody with schizophrenia, which is, you know, but it's damned close because you're looking at, and they're just looking, and they're saying ridiculous things. You know, it's crazy. Other questions? Well, next time at least we got two topics, so it won't take only like a 26 seconds. Next time we do marijuana and LSD. Oh yeah. And your homework? Kidding, of course. So I'll see you then. And thanks, guys.
I'll climb up all the stones on my own to get where my heart will remember it. And give me a roller coaster ride over the dust and gravel road. I'll go in through the trees where I started to see all of the simple things I need to be. So long goodbye, so helpless I could only be.
Podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright, share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right, giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want. Okay. Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.